You are tuned into TCS Podcasts.
Cities have long been personified as living, breathing entities in both literature and in folktales and stories. Turns out science agrees. Welcome to TCS Research Podcast. My name is Sheetal, and on this episode, we're going to be diving deeper into the joint work that's been done by TCS Research and Stanford University, which highlights the patterns of material inflows and outflows that make up urban metabolism. Today we have with us Shailesh Deshpande, who's a senior scientist at TCS Research, and also Anirudh Vijay, who's a PhD scholar in the Department of Electrical Engineering at Stanford University. Now, a bit more about this podcast before we get started. We will draw your attention through a series of questions on our collaborative work in analyzing urban water consumption using remote sensing data. And this comes to you in the context of World Space Week, which is observed between the 4th and the 10th of October. And the theme this year is space and sustainability, and our experts will be sharing insights on the use of space technology in urban development for such a sustainable future. Well, thank you for making time for us on this podcast, and welcome to the show, Shailesh and Anirudh. And let's start with you, Shailesh. Now, the work that you and your team are doing in robotics and autonomous systems is actually very diverse. So how did this focus on space technology, and in particular, remote sensing, come into the picture? If you could also draw our attention to the primary objectives and the expected outcomes of the work that you're doing, that I think will set us off at a good point in this conversation.
Yes, indeed. It is very diverse and transdisciplinary. So if you see it, there are three main components. One is sensing platforms like satellites, ground stations, and the third one is data processing. Okay. So data processing is a very important element of overall value chain as it delivers the solution to the end user.
Okay.
So sensors are designed with a certain downstream task in mind too. So for example, monitoring CO2. Okay. So that's why we, in addition to other projects, have dedicated TCS research team called Remote Sensing and Space Technology for Enterprises. Mm-hmm. While we are working under this broad theme, we wanted to embark on research that would create a socio-economic impact, the research that would make significant difference to the lives of the people in some way. As one of the remote sensing agencies says, from pixel to people. So that was our motto, that was our focus.
Mm-hmm.
Given our objectives, we focus on two main pillars of the society and sustainability.
Okay.
One is infrastructure and another is environment.
Okay.
So what we try to do is we try to understand the complex interaction between them. We monitor infrastructure and try to extract as much as information from remotely sensed data as possible. For example, health of the infrastructure, it is important, right? So we want to monitor health of the infrastructure continuously. We also see how vulnerable it is to the external natural hazard. Say, for example, landslide. We see lots of landslide cases in Maharashtra, right? So we want to see how vulnerable that infrastructure, particular infrastructure, is to that landslide or any such natural hazard. Particularly, we don't stop there. We try to understand further how anthropogenic activities, human activities, are correlated with environmental changes,
mm-hmm.
like urban metabolism work we'll discuss today.
Right.
And all the while we are doing this, we are trying to focus on multimodal data, how to integrate it, how to use it in multiple ways. So we use hyperspectral data for precision information. Similarly, we use SAR for terrain analysis. And moreover, we try to see if we can fuse the information from multiple modalities to enhance the performance of the algorithm. So that's what I can say about this.
Right. Well, thank you for that perspective that helps us for the rest of the conversation as well. And Anirudh, I must come to you. Now, TCS Research partners with academic institutions to jointly invent for impact. That is something that our listeners are aware of as well. Now, the publication In Focus for this episode has actually seen the involvement of two different departments from your university. But, you know, before we dive deeper into the collaborative work, tell us about the partnership and how it all began.
Well, it all started with a machine learning course here at Stanford. As a part of the course project, Shashwat Mohanty, who is our co-author, he and I had the opportunity to choose to work with industry affiliates. And we looked at many of the problem statements, and we came across Dr. Deshpande's proposal. And we really liked the combination of urban metabolism and remote sensing, and we just went with this. And in that project, we were able to apply the skills we learned from the machine learning course. And Dr. Deshpande also guided us with the ideas of processing hyperspectral data in the context of urban resource consumption. And it was honestly our very first time working on a machine learning project. And I'm glad we were able to collaborate with the scientists at TCS Research.
Wonderful to hear that. And, you know, Shailesh, Anirudh just brought up the phrase urban metabolism. Now, this is in the context, of course, of the sustainable and smart city planning topic that is in spotlight and focus today. Now, as I understand, urban metabolism is a framework to assess how various systems in a city use the available resources and infrastructures. You yourself helped us understand that when you introduced the topic earlier. Now, your joint publication, Understanding Urban Water Consumption Using Remotely Sensed Data, also describes urban metabolism as a framework that models cities as living entities which consume energy and natural resources and release byproducts in the process. Now, tell us more about this. It sounds like a biology lesson to me from my high school, but nevertheless, how is remote sensing used to estimate urban metabolism?
Right, that is very right. So cities like an organism, we can model certainly in that way. So essentially, it consumes resources, it produces outcomes of its livelihood. And well, in addition to outcome of livelihood, it produces waste as well. Okay, so if we see that a particular cell metabolism, exactly it mimics, right? It consumes resources and produces some, it grows and it produces some waste.
Yeah.
So in this whole equation, it is important to know that given a city attribute, say, for example, number of buildings or maybe vegetation area and so forth, we'll see some of them later, how it affects the resources or waste and other outcomes. So that is the main part. That is the important part, how it affects particular parameter we are focusing on.
Right.
So we call these attributes of the cities, whatever I mentioned, as proxy features, as they help us to estimate the quantity of our interest, especially in absence of direct data from survey. So there are many other methods by which we can calculate it if direct measurements are available, but these are not direct measurements. They are proxy measures. They are helpful us in developing those relations indirectly. So other example of such proxies are, say, proportion of area of vegetation in a given city, or area of buildings or built up area, as we call it.
Right.
Maybe even length of road. So for example, one can easily see that length of road would be very much correlated with the amount of CO2 because of vehicular pollution and so on and so forth, right?
Right.
So remote sensing helps in extracting these city features quickly over a large area because of the satellite imagery essentially.
Right.
Now, which can be used for developing these relations. So I can develop a relation between buildings and wastewater. I can develop a relation between buildings and CO2. And again, many more examples can be seen as we go along. So furthermore, it's just not only that. Remote sensing is also very helpful in monitoring changes in the city on a continuous basis. Okay. So this acts as a you can imagine it is a non-intrusive probe continuously monitoring health of the city on continuous basis almost.
Right.
I mean, that is the intent, right? So we want to monitor a city on continuous basis, especially its health and how it is going to impact environment and so on and so forth.
Right.
Other advantage of this approach, the way I see it, is that now we have a model for predicting environmental impact. Now we can use it for creating what if scenarios now. So for example, given a city growth, in terms of buildings or in terms of built up area, now I can predict the water.
Right.
Okay. Now, if I can predict the water given a buildings, and if I predict the future number of buildings, now I can predict the future water requirement in future as well, right? Now, water is just one example. Similarly, I can do it for CO2. Similarly, I can do it for particulate matter. Similarly, I can do it for any other important parameter of interest.
Right. Yeah. So clearly, I mean, immense value in remote sensing in that it also helps in predictive modeling from the data that you actually collect and this continuous monitoring that you were talking about. Now, I also want to ask you, Shailesh, in the publication, you've taken a supervised learning approach for classifying building pixels according to building type. And I found that phrase that you used really early on very, very interesting. Pixels to people, if I remember right. So So building type, by that we mean residential and non-residential buildings. So why does this supervised learning approach work better than this unsupervised learning in this context?
Right. So we use supervised learning approach mainly because of the data availability of whatever we are trying to work on. Mainly, as you mentioned, we are trying to identify buildings and again, type of building, whether it's residential or non-residential, because the water consumption will depend upon that, right?
Mm-hmm.
The supervised approaches work well generally if good amount of training data is available. Okay,
right.
That was the case over here.
Yeah.
See, unsupervised learning is useful in generating insights when we don't know what we are looking for. Say, for example, we are just looking from the data some interesting patterns. Okay. Then unsupervised learning is useful, especially clustering kind of techniques. Okay.
Right.
But here that was not the case. We clearly knew what we are looking for. Okay. We were looking for the buildings mainly first, and the second focus was types of buildings, whether it's residential, industrial. And again, if we can go into detail, then maybe when we would like to know type of building, as in whether it's a setter, whether it's a mall, and so forth. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, enough data for that was available. Furthermore, what I can see is that we could have used image interpretation and generate the data also. Okay. So there is a VKM API as well, right? So we can get that data from multiple sources, and enough number of training data would have been available. That was the case why we use supervised learning.
Right. So, since you're talking about data, remotely sensed data, Anirudh, I have a question for you. Have you used publicly available data for this exploratory work that we are discussing right now? And then by obviously extension, have there been any data related challenges that you've encountered or even foresee for such an invention to be implemented on a larger scale?
Yeah, well, we did obtain our data online from a Kaggle challenge. So Kaggle is an online machine learning and data science community, and they hold contests, and they also have public open source data available for these labeled and supervised learning tasks.
Right.
And from this Kaggle, we were able to obtain hyperspectral satellite imagery to detect buildings. So in this context, hyperspectral means that we have image pixels, not just in the red, green, and blue channels, but we have other wavelength channels also, which is typical in a good satellite image.
Right.
So in any machine learning project, data collection is crucial. But then from a project management point of view, it is recommended that we quickly collect some data and then start working. Mm-hmm. Because if you want to just collect data, we can keep collecting it.
Right.
And this Kaggle data set was actually a perfect starting point because it had a number of satellite images and the buildings were already labeled.
Right.
And we were able to take this data and train our machine learning models to detect buildings. Mm-hmm. And once we had these buildings, we then wanted to classify them as residential and non-residential because as Dr. Deshpande mentioned, this will affect the amount of water consumption that happens in the area.
Right.
And after this step, we used historic water consumption levels to estimate the consumption for the given area.
Mm-hmm.
And now coming to your question about what I foresee when we implement this at a large scale definitely we have that question of scalability because there's a lot of data available, like high resolution satellite images available of large European cities like Paris or Barcelona.
Right.
But if you're interested in a very specific geographic location, then that might pose a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
For many reasons, like it could be security or privacy policies, and just the fact that for a remote location, images might just not be available in a public domain.
Right.
So for implementing something like this in a big scale, then we may need to collaborate with geosensing or a weather agency that has access to this kind of data.
Right. Understood. Yeah, that is fascinating, really. But let's come back to Shailesh. Now that you have this framework to estimate the water consumption from satellite images of an urban region, is there a plan to extend this work to other regions across the globe, notwithstanding the challenges to that Anirudh just brought up? And how do you think that this technology is going to impact industries and societies as a whole? And then I have one more question. I know there are too many questions over here, but nevertheless, is there a specific industry in mind that you have that could reap benefits using this technology?
Oh, yes. So certainly we would like to scale the system up and we'd like to address as many as regions possible. Of course, there will be some regional variations. And based on the introduction, you might have guessed it very well, right, that the topic is very broad, right? So there are many components that needs to be worked out. There are many models like metabolism model for water, metabolism model for CO2 and so needs to be worked out.
Right.
And as I mentioned, there will be some regional variation also, which will ultimately address as we go along.
Right.
Right. Overall, what we believe is that urban metabolism would be a key application for urban planner, urban administrative departments, utility companies, financial primers like banks, insurance industry, especially for green loans. We heard that word nowadays quite a lot, right? Green loans, right? So in all such cases, I feel that this urban metabolism framework would be overall very useful, as it has power of generating what if scenarios based on the conditions, right?
Right.
And it's not only that, it will be important for anybody living in the city, right? Because of same reason, right? It generates multiple scenarios given the conditions.
Yeah.
I see it can predict the future of the city in most of the aspects. Okay, so it might be a crude approximation sometimes, but it is available quickly, which otherwise is very difficult to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it would be further helpful in disaster management too. For example, urban floods. Again, that also many of the urban areas all over the world are facing that issues, right? They are being affected by urban floods, right? So that's what I can see. I can see that not only commercially it will be very useful, but it will be useful for many social and natural disasters which keep on happening in the city.
Right, understood. Now, Anirudh, since let's come back to the theme over here for World Space Week, sustainability in space and sustainability from space. So how do you see this work contributing towards sustainable urban planning and development or any other aspect of sustainability? And do you think space technology can play an important role in building sustainable futures?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, for example, even in our project, we talked about water consumption, right? That's definitely fits the theme. But I think it can be easily extended to a consumption of any resource, and even emissions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this sort of analysis would be really useful for, let's say, government or environmental agencies to quickly estimate urban metabolism. And so this would take city planning also to the level of sustainable planning and sustainable planning.
Right.
So I think this would really complement like traditional methods like surveying, which are more expensive and time consuming.
Right.
But I think Dr. Deshpande might have better insight into this than me.
Right, absolutely. Dr. Deshpande, anything you'd like to add to what Anirudh has just said?
Yeah, sure. Thanks. Anirudh gave a nice introduction to how it would be applicable to sustainable Earth. But overall, the answer is emphatic yes. Okay, so space tech is, as I can see, is poised to play a very critical role in understanding the Earth. Of course, it has been doing that for quite a long time, but considering the amount of platforms and the amount of satellites being launched and dedicated to monitoring Earth systems, especially anthropogenic systems and their interaction,
mm-hmm.
Remote sensing is going to play a very, very critical role.